一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。
It's May 22nd. Welcome back to Speaker Podcast's Girl Talk. And I have some bad news, guys. The unthinkable has happened. Messa has lost his cat ears. That's it. The show's over. We no longer have any need to watch it. We're shutting it all down. That's it. But in all seriousness, episode 8 has just finished airing. It's almost midnight here in Tokyo. And we're here to talk all about it. Yes, folks, as we say every week, not only will we have spoilers, we will probably have mistakes because we don't have no time to wait for no subs. We want to be talking about this ASAP. We're talking about it now, as is everyone else.
As so, if the subs don't have mistakes.
I wouldn't know, Adrian. I've never watched any. But, without further ado, to my left, as you just heard, I have...
Adrian Lozano of @GiantRobo on Twitter, if that's actually a place.
And to Adrian's left, the mysterious Venus.
Egan Liu,
over here.
And on the other side of this call, we have no one. It's just the three of us here tonight, everyone. Mike's computer is out of action. I guess you better get Makina to look at that for you, Mike. Sarah is not with us. She's on temporary suspension from the podcast for talking bad about Makina. And Renato's drunk somewhere. So it's just the three of us this week, guys. And let's get into it. Episode 8 of Macross Delta opens up exactly where we left off last week with our love triangle, Freya, Hayate, and Mirage, still in this cave in Baldur, captured, seemingly, by the Aerial Knights. And as we saw in the preview pictures they showed before the episode came out, Mirage and Hayate pretty much get their butts kicked until Mirage pulls out a flash grenade, throws it on the ground. Now, if this show followed anime tropes or what you'd normally expect from an anime, they'd have all been almost instantaneously out of there. They'd have escaped like that. But they all got their butts soundly kicked.
By the twins.
By the twins from Street Fighter 3. Was it Yang and Jung? Well, I forgot. Yeah. It was like a Looney Tunes moment. The flashbang went off and you just heard bang, crack, pop, blammo, and when the smoke cleared, the dust cleared, our human team had gotten the worst of it, by far. We learned later there's probably a reason they didn't show us what happened, because you find out as the episode goes on, Adrian, it kind of seems like the Aerial Knights almost have superhuman powers.
Well, they lead up to that when Bogue goes down to approach them, because... When I was looking at it, they're wearing pretty much cloth and armor, and they have swords, and he just pops down there. Now, that's not like a real big thing to notice, but, and then when he goes to run at Hayate, he does kind of like that dodging bullets move, where he goes from side to side to side and then punches them.
Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Yeah, and then I brought it up in the middle of the episode, and it's kind of like, well, I don't know. But then Peter happened to be here, who was on the original first podcast we ever did.
That was a long time ago.
And he mentioned that, well, Barrera did the same thing. And I said, oh yeah, you're right. But then he goes, but he had implants. So he was half cyborg, half human. So that made sense for him to have this kind of agility. Why would Windermerians have it? And then we kind of just said, oh, okay, well then they're probably just normal humans. But then as the episode goes on, they pretty much have... a lot more agility than a human would, because they go on to dodge bullets. Have their rune also has like spidey sense that warns them something's going to happen that's dangerous. And as Messer comes back into the picture later, you know, he's basically having a one-to-one with Keith, but it's gun to sword. Mm-hmm. And Keith is jumping all these long distances and just dodging bullets left and right. So, they obviously, I wouldn't say they have mutant powers, but They've got agilities humans don't have.
Yeah, certainly it seems that way. It almost seems like pretty much Barrera level power. Yeah. Like a bit of extra strength, mostly like speed, jumping ability. It seemed very Barrera-ish. Like if you remember him rescuing, like grabbing Cheryl and jumping away. And
yeah, but again, that's all because of the cybernetic implants. Right. That's not, you know, oh, there you go, right there on the screen as we're watching.
Yeah.
So,
so while this is happening, Messer and the rest of Valkyrie are trying to escape, and Messer takes a bullet to the arm for Kaname. And is that going to affect some kind of love triangle in the future? I don't know. But he very obviously pushed her to safety and took a bullet while doing so. Are we going to see more of this thing between her, him, and Arad? Possibly. We'll see. Meanwhile, Berg is going out of his way to give Freya a lecture, give Hayate and Freya a lecture, and he's talking about how basically the Aerial Knights, the Windermerians, want to set free all the planets in the system that they claim were forced into peace by, are we called the NUG, the new, is it new UN Space Government?
United Nations.
Shintobo.
It wasn't Gun, though, it was Togo Seifu, right?
Yeah, new United Nations government.
So they got rid of the army and got rid of, made government, so.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh, that's how it was called back in the, well, the first Macross series. When they switched over after the first war, they started saying the Shin, no, Togo, well, Togo Seifu.
Was there ever an official translation for that? How do you say?
As it's seen in the 171's logo, new NUN, so New United Nations.
Interesting, interesting. Okay, so, of course, Hayate disagrees with this because, you know, how can you free planets when you're freeing them by taking over and mind-controlling 70% of their military? Freya, however, has a more compelling argument, and that is, whatever, you should not use food for war. Especially not apples. Apples are not a tool of war.
All these people worked so hard to bring these apples to the world and use them for war. Yeah.
It was a very typically Freya moment and caught Berg off guard, which I thought was
caught
great.
Everyone off guard, including even Hayate.
That was good, yeah. We also see that Messer, while he's trying to escape, appears to have some PTSD issues going on. It seems like there's been some kind of incident in his past, an incident which involves a lot of shooting and blood, and in the thick of combat, when he's been winged by this bullet, it starts coming back to him.
I was wondering if that is some indication of why he has that rule that he's been trying to drill into Mirage and Hayate about UN pilots. They sign up to, you know, die if need be. So, you know, take him out if you have to. And what we're seeing there might be a hint of why he, you know, has that philosophy.
So Mikomo joins up with the rest of Valkyrie. Where has she been? What did she achieve while, you know, she was apparently hearing something from the ruins? We don't know yet. However, she joins up with them and we get this question posed to us. Why is it that Makina refers to Mikumo as Kumokumo and not Mikumiku? Is this a copyright issue? We don't want too much Miku in this show? I don't know, but I just noticed it for the first time. I was like, well, that's kind of odd. So they're about to hatch a rescue plan. Meanwhile, Keith is about to kill Freya, and Freya gets saved at the last moment by Royd.
Yeah, not Hayate, but Roy.
But Royd. And, you know, we already are getting the hints of a past relationship between Royd and Keith in the manga. They had a bit of a... They've known each other for a lot longer than you think and are of more similar age, apparently. The manga has yet to go into too much detail. It just started that flashback last month. But Keith is not very happy, of course, that Royd's jumped in. Royd claims, you know, he told them to capture Valkyrie, that there was still stuff he wanted to learn about Valkyrie, which I think is an important point. And if they killed them, they'd be no better than
the UN.
Than the UN. Or the UN Space. We have to work out a new word for this.
The new UN. Is
the new UN. Mm-hmm. Which is really odd, given that, you know, we'd learned previously that it was the Windermerians who'd set off the dimensional weapon on themselves. So I'm not really sure. There's got to be more to the story, I guess. So in the middle of all this, of course, hologram projectors pop out. The hologram projectors are back. We haven't seen them for a few episodes. The drones. And what do we get? But we get kind of a concert rescue operation. Now, we've had concert everything today. You know, we've had concert training montages. We've had concert battles. We've had concert infiltrations. And, well, musical, I should be saying. Now we have a musical rescue. And
hence the name of the episode. No. Escape Resonance. Yes.
Well, a musical diversion.
Well, true, because during all this, Messer's just going all out and shooting, and I was just like, you camping prick. Like, I was just thinking, he's one of those guys in Call of Duty who just finds that little gap in where you can barely see him, and he's just picking off at people while they're looking at the pretty girls.
Yeah, because the actual members of Valkyrae are grabbing everyone and taking them into safety, and the holograms are doing all the diversion work, and it's almost working against them, like, as if they were Zentradi, because they were, like, very hesitant and very, like, scared. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a weird effect that they don't explain, because they're not Zentradi.
Oh, well, we do
and
know
they don't have the VAR, because... Mm. So I just thought it was kind of a weird...
We scenario. Do know there's been a block on... There's severe restrictions on human culture, the planet, so it could be they're not used to hearing it, but then... There's got to be some story over whoever it was that gave Freya her little MP3 player.
Mm.
Because how is it the shield so easily given this music that gave it this influence, and yet the Aerial Knights are like, oh, this is like girl germ music. It's like, ew. They've really got that kind of reaction. They're like schoolboys that have been touched by a girl or something. It's kind of weird. So we get this song. They all get out. There's a little confrontation, thank you, between Messer and Keith on the way out, and Keith is like, well, we're going to settle this in the air. So they get out, and there is indeed an air battle. Who am I talking about here? Arad and Chuck have flown down to the surface to help with the extraction. I don't know how they got to the surface, whether the tunnel that Reyna opened up was a permanent affair, but they'd already been caught onto that the network had been hacked. So how did they just fly through? I'm not really sure.
I would say it's because they were trying to get in and not get noticed. They don't, at this point, Arad and Chuck don't care if they are getting noticed. They're going in guns blazing.
That's a good point. So they get down there. The Aerial Knights use Hinds to kick in some VAR syndrome and mess with people. And actually, what are they trying to achieve with that song? Because, you know, it's pretty obvious none of Valkyrae are going to be affected directly by the VAR, and yet the song does have an effect on them, but it kind of just messes everyone up.
Some more than others. And there's also the pilots on the planet who are now going to be rallied to fight against the Valkyrae and the Delta.
Good point. Although apparently it only brings maybe 3 or 4 of them.
Not much.
So, Heinz, your singing's not as effective as it should be, mate. So, Freya mentions when she hears this song that it has no colour, which I thought was interesting. And her rune was noticeably darkened. However, interestingly enough, all of Delta Platoon can hear it. Whereas previously, it had only been Mikomor, Freya, and Hayate who'd heard it. Well, all of Valkyrae can hear it, sorry. I don't think Chuck could hear it, because he's like, does this mean we're going to get the VAR?
I wonder if it has to do with how close they are to the ruins. And that might be, like, you know, well, Fold Receptor, throw in some, you know, technobabble, but that might be the reason.
That could be it. Mm-hmm. So Valkyrae decide to sing back with a new song called Neostream, which, from what tiny snippet we heard, appeared to be in English. So I'm looking forward to hearing the whole song whenever it's eventually released. So during this, Messer's fighting Keith. It appears that Messer is possibly turning. He's in a very bad state. And on the ground, one of the VAR-infected pilots attacks Freya. And this would be the father of the cute little furry kids from last episode, whose name is...
Alberto.
Alberto. Now, Hayate goes in to fight him. Freya doesn't want him to attack Alberto, because he's a father. And Freya goes and has a bit of a busser moment. She just goes in there and is like, I'm going to sing at him. And she sings, and it's kind of working until she would have gotten her butt shot off. Hayate had to jump in with these pinpoint barriers, if that's what those things on his arms are, and shield Freya. And I thought that was a great moment, because it kind of gave us this mix of, yes, it is going kind of seven at times, but before the power of song, like, it's not instant, and there was some reality to it. She had to be shielded from danger. I thought that was a really good point. So it took some time and she was being protected, but the song picked up steam and eventually worked. In fact, everyone seemed to be able to feel it or hear it. And it was also mentioned previously that Valkyria's song was resonating or the ruins were reacting to Valkyria's song. And the way Royd saw it, it seemed to be either in a different or possibly a greater
way. He was intrigued himself, yeah. He was surprised that it wasn't working the way it was.
So we're not sure if it was like that it was more effective than Heinz's song or if it was just different. But Royd was happily surprised. So this probably ties into the whole, I have something about Valkyria I want to. I have yet to find out. when I think it needs to be noted that when Freya is singing it, Alberto, she's singing the song from last episode, Giraffe Blues.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So now we have three versions of this song. We have the kids singing it. We have a clip of Mikamore singing it. Now we have Freya singing it. Episode 8, and we have our new IMO for the series, folks. We are going to be so sick of this song. It's not a bad song. I actually like it more than IMO, to be honest.
I think I like Freya's version more so far.
Oh, really? I really want to hear a full version of Mikamore's.
It's true. We haven't heard a full version.
Plus, it was kind of a cappella, because she had no backing. Well, Freya didn't either, did she?
Mia certainly didn't.
This is true.
Mia being the girl who was singing it to her father, yeah.
And her song also resonates with Hayate, interestingly enough, who has taken to the air after protecting Freya, and can somehow transform after having his head shot off and still fly. There's visibly smoke.
Hayate?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't shot off. The head unit was damaged. And the full image did not disappear from his HUD. It just became pixelated. So he could see, he just can't target.
But could he, the fact he could transform with half his head missing,
shouldn't be a problem.
You can tell this was done after the invention of the web, because you see what error it was when the optics went out?
404?
Yeah. It's like, yeah, there's more errors than that in the real world.
No, there's only one error. It's 404. Everything is 404.
Everything goes down because of that.
So he's taking on Borg, and this song from Freya reaches him, and first of all, his pendant, which, has always been the pink elephant or pink pendant in the room, visibly is reacting this time, as in we have waves of fold energy coming out of it, and his plane goes into what I like to call alto/shin mode. It's glowing gold. And is suddenly, like, it's Super Saiyan, pretty much. It's it's moving faster. He has faster perception. And Mikamore's just like, oh, I see he's finally, awakened to the power. And it's just like, well, I don't know. I don't see too many Valkyrie pilots flying around with blazing gold trails behind them, unless it's the finale of a movie or an OVA. This seems like a pretty significant power-up to be getting this early in the show. And I hope it doesn't happen all the time, to be honest. It's kind of a win button.
They've been hinting about it some of the interaction between him and Freya puts him to sync. And yeah, they even commented about that once again in this episode that brings out something in both of them.
Hmm. So you've got to wonder where this is going. But anyways, so Hayate shoots down Bogue, which I'm sure will make a lot of people happy.
Well, not only did he...
Not necessarily the fangirls.
He could have ended Bogue.
Oh, right.
Yeah. That's the thing, and he didn't. He already had the upper hand before that. He targeted the cockpit, and then, of course, he shot the leg when he was in girl walk.
Sweep the leg, man.
Yeah. But instead of taking no mercy...
Nice.
You know, he's coming back at some point. And, you know, I don't like to speculate, but I would say that's probably going to lead to Bo coming back and killing somebody probably pretty important.
Hmm.
And he's going to probably go through the whole guilt thing of, I didn't listen to Messer, and we lost somebody because I didn't take the shot on the person he should have shot.
Well, it could. There's a lot of interesting speculation I'm hearing, but we'll get to that when we've done this episode, actually. I think it's worth bringing a few points up. So everyone gets back to the ether. Freya kind of reconfirms her dedication, her decision to sing. And we go to credits, and post-credits we get another Marvel epilogue.
The Stinger.
Which we see Messer slouched on the ground post-battle, or after disembarking from his Valk, looking like he's almost going VAR. Obviously in a lot of pain. He hasn't even been to the infirmary yet. He's still bleeding. And that is the end of the episode. So, who knows what that means? You know, if it's the VAR, you would think, because he visibly got better when Freya sang, right? The thing is, I don't see Messer as being... He doesn't look Zentradi to me in the slightest, right? But the fact that, you know, Arad has asked him about his body, asked him how his health is, and that he seems to be very prone to getting VAR symptoms, although granted we know he's in the military, he had the apples in the water, but the VAR should have been fixed by this point. So what is special about Messer that it's potentially coming back? What if he does have some Zentradi stuff, and this is a, you know, a gold from Macross Plus like scenario where it's like a trigger for, and I hate to be so boring, but a trigger for asthma or something, where VAR is, it's kind of kicked off his system and he's trying to suppress his Zentradi urge. Because the flashback, brief exactly. as it was, seemed to be some sort of massacre. So what if he'd lost control before?
He was the one who instigated it, that one.
Killed a bunch of people. That's why he's so stick-up-his-butt strict now. Because he tells everyone, this training is for their own sake. Why is it for their own sake? So they won't die. Why might they die? Not the enemy, because of Messer. So what if that's what all this is where he's coming from, and this is potentially he could go Zentron or something on the ship.
And likewise, his training where he's been telling people, you know, take out the UN pilots because they know what their duty was. They know if caught upon, they will die. And that would, you know, bring back maybe Messer was seeing what he might have done in the past and wish someone had done that to him.
So the thing is, there's been no indication he has any Zentron in him whatsoever. So it could be an issue of VAR with PSTD or something. But there's obviously something there that could blow at any minute, which is an interesting idea, I thought. So overall impressions. Now that I've completely exhausted myself, because Renato, you need to stop drinking and come and help out with the podcast, mate.
Or still drink. It was more fun when he's
this
drunk.
This is true. You can still podcast when you're drunk, Renato. We said this. Impressions. Adrian, was there anything about the episode that...
No, not really. It was just moving things along.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of it. Seeing Windermere's, talking to Windermere's about...
Windermere stuff?
Yeah. closing the hole with the ace pilot from that planet.
Right.
So, yeah, it's kind of an up-in-the-air episode. It wasn't spectacular. It wasn't boring. It was just kind of, okay, things happened. Interesting things came out, but it wasn't really what we were looking to have happen, I think. I think everyone was waiting for something with Mikimoto kind of materialize.
That That's a good point. It seems like they were answering some questions, but not the ones everyone had after the last episode.
Yeah. And raising some new questions like, oh, they have this power now, or what she doing in this, and that kind of thing.
Mm. So what do you think of the episode again?
I noticed, yeah, there's a couple of things. Like Herman, we found out a little bit about his past. And we also get back to that question, why does Freya sing? Even the Windermerians are asking that, having her flashback to when Mikumo asked that same question.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like by the end of the episode, she figured out why, and she got her mojo back.
I certainly think it's setting up some potentially interesting stuff, but part of this comes from how fast the show moves, because keep in mind, we had our core triangle captured when the episode opened, and in most anime it would take the entire episode for them to get uncaptured. And in this it was like, no, they're out of that cave by the ad break, by the mid-episode mark, and we're back into fighting. Granted, it was a whole episode to get back off planet, but things were moving together, you know, pretty fast. It just didn't seem like they were answering the questions like this. They're continuously setting things up. And it feels like we're waiting longer than we have been because things move so quick. So I'm already at the point where, okay, give me some answers to some of this. But then you realize it's still in episode 8.
If you think about the similar time frame for the first Macross series, there was the Big Escape, similar kind of setup. And we get a whole bunch of answers for the introduction of Centrati. But then we get Ray's questions of why are the Centrati doing this? Mm-hmm. Why? So similar to here, we get here a little bit more than Windermerians, but only raises more questions about what's going on.
Right. Of course, the whole being captured thing, which I don't think we've pointed out, is another Macross trope.
Yes.
You know, having the key, and no one kissed. Everyone just got the crap kicked out of them.
Yeah, it doesn't work on the Windermerians, I imagine.
Well, and then you were saying, in the beginning, your R triangle, I still don't see one. I just don't. Like, that's just on the poster and the promotion materials.
Uh-huh.
But there is no love of any interest going on between these characters at all.
That's a good point. I mean, they are presented to us as the face of the show, as the triangle. I agree with you 100%. They're not showing any feelings yet.
Yeah, but not romantic love, but definitely you've got Mirage and Hayate realizing that they're allies, that they fight better when they're fighting alongside each other. And then you got Freya and Hayate, learning that they do better in sync, but not necessarily romantic love on either of the two triangle legs.
Because there's no competition going between anybody, and there's no one getting left out in the cold because they're on the same team. And they're all working together. So no one's kind of pissed off anybody or, nobody's gone and turned a poster of Freya upside down in Hayate's bedroom, so to speak. They're not putting up with each other. They all are dealing with the same thing and they all support each other.
You know what they need to bump things up a notch? A high school episode.
Yes. Yes. Panties on the run. yes, we need another panty episode. That's just got to be.
So, a few things I was noticing is that Messa, and people have noticed in previous episodes, the animators seem to have a very difficult time keeping Messa drawn on model. He'll go from seeming like having a relatively, not a round face, but some more weight to his face, and then suddenly at some angles he looks like a beanstalk. He seems to be drawn off model. You're smiling, Adrian.
You do this every time.
All right. He's still smiling,
it's
everyone.
It's a weekly anime series. You get what you get within the time they have to produce this show between the different countries that are doing the in-betweening, different people that have the 3D stuff to do, and if they get it in, they get it in. This off-model BS, I just, no.
Well, the thing is, it's not a discrepancy that stands out for any other character. It seems very Messa-specific to me. I was actually really impressed at how great Keith's animation looked. All the close-ups on him and when he's coming up against Mesa, he was almost drawn like a Nobuteru Yuki character. Like, last, I thought he looked great.
Last thing I heard something that ludicrous was something about Koreans like loving to draw big boobs.
So what you're telling me is that we need to bring Star Pro in on this shit.
Well, I'd say DR Movie, but that's what I was going with.
I know.
But
well, that's what I thought, at least. I thought there was more noticeable off-model shots specifically of Mesa. And I'm wondering what it is about that character, or who it is that's doing it, maybe, that seems to be having issues, which is a shame, because they're obviously building him up for some interesting things.
Why don't you just tweet the girl?
Oh, she's not done.
Oh, she does the guys. The girls? I don't know. One of them. They're on Twitter.
Yeah, but they're not doing all the, you know, in-betweens and stuff. But
I noticed the animation quality dipping a bit, but I was also expecting it, because I was looking for when the animation quality was going to go down, because, like, for example, we're also watching Carbon Area of the Iron Fortress. It's starting to, you know, after the first couple of episodes of great animation, you can only, like Adrian was saying, you can only keep that up for so long on a weekly series. It's and true. The first Macross series especially, but had the, you know, valleys and hills in terms of animation quality.
But have you watched, like, the most recent Carbonelli? Like,
yeah, they brought it back.
Yeah, exactly my point.
So you're going to get the hills and valleys as, you know, over time. And when they decide judiciously when to devote more effort and more manpower to which episodes and when they need it. Yeah. And hence, I was wondering, I was amused by that whole flash grenade scene. It's like, perfect time to save some animation.
Right, although, yeah, they have the excuse of, I guess, wanting to hold off on showing how powerful the Windermerians were for at least another scene or two. And it wasn't long, but...
And I also thinking another reason why they did that was to show, this is Macross. A flash grenade's not going to, you know, cut it here. You're going to need to do a whole song and dance routine.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Valkyrie-wise, we've watched the episode twice now, and I was originally a little critical. Some of the Valkyrie movement seemed more phoned in, a little more slidey. There wasn't the resistance you expect for an in-atmosphere battle. Second time around, yeah, it basically, with a few minor scenes being the exception to the rule, they were just basically, they were moving the same they always were. Just it stood out more because it was a brightly lit atmospheric battle, I guess. What do you think, Egan?
Well, it didn't take as much of a dip as the character animation did. I think the character animation made it more noticeable. Mm. But then, yeah, there was certain scenes where, yeah, the lack of inertia in objects. But, right. Given that this is a weekly television series, it's not too bad going so far. Once again, like thinking about like Carbonari, another a great animated series this season, and it's done the same thing where, you know, episodes that have been great animation and then sometimes dips below on the others.
I did notice and was kind of impressed. Oh, impressed is the wrong word. It was interesting how it's episode 8 and they were revisiting concepts and things from episode 1. For example, the drones were finally back in full force. They were being used. Mikomo was throwing out her giant robo attack. You know, go drones, protect us from this missile. And they all knew what to do. Similarly, yeah, drones as barriers, drones moving at Mikomo's command. Ikenai Borderline was back. I think we neglected to mention that. When Freya at the very end reestablished her dedication to her decision, we got the same music originally from episode 1 where she's twirling on the beam saying, I'm not going home. But in that case, it was a really silly and naive and bright scene. And in this scene, she had a very serious expression on her face. So that change with the same BGM, I thought was really neat. But it was also immediately called to mind episode 1.
Kind of like you were talking about Giraffe Blues. We've heard it 3 different times, but it's sung differently and done to the... at where it needed to be at that moment.
So I've heard another rather interesting fan theory from some Japanese fans regarding this.
I'm going to say, before you go into that,
okay,
I find it highly odd that we are talking about the lack or drop in animation when this is following the tonkotsu DJ. animation, right? Nobody comes off watching that show going, you know, there was a drop in animation in this episode of Tonkotsu DJ. Like, you guys just don't appreciate anything.
You'll hear it in a second. You guys. Well, see, there's the problem with that theory, Adrian. This isn't animation. This is Macross.
Touché.
There's this theory I've heard, and I don't necessarily put stock in this, but it was interesting enough that I thought it's worth conveying. The pilot that got shot down a couple of episodes back, the young Windermere pilot, in a certain light, under certain conditions, with the moon in a certain place and at a certain time of the year, he kind of resembles a slightly aged version of the guy that Freya was supposed to marry, who we've seen in one of the manga. Now, that's a far-fetched call to make, and I'm not sure yet how Windermere's age, or how much time has passed between that episode and the manga, but if that were to happen, that would be a very interesting turn on events. You'd find later on that Hayate had killed him. Just something that's out there. Something we know that is... Two things we know, actually. That is more concrete on solid sources. New Type has revealed two things recently, and that is that in that one shot with the Mega Road class ship that we saw on Windermere a few episodes ago, that was in fact the Mega Road 4, and that it was in fact making contact with Windermere 4. Now, we don't know if that's a colony of Windermere, a city on Windermere, or whether they renamed Windermere after contact. But either way, the important takeaway there is it wasn't the original Mega Road. And I'm hoping we get a flashback, because I want to see, you know, a close-up of that ship.
I was under assumption that when we saw that Windermere 4, that they meant the fourth planet within the system.
Oh, it could be before they named them. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Interesting. The other thing that's come to light is to do with Makina. Makina Nakajima. Her surname is, as has been pointed out, the same as that of the lead mechanic engineer from Macross Zero. And New Type pointed out that, yes, Makina is in fact related to the lead engineer from Macross Zero. So again, it all ties back to Macross Zero. Frontier tied back to Zero. Delta's time back to Zero. It's very interesting how they're constantly bringing that show back in some way, when it didn't get that movie that the cast all talked about on the documentary on the Blu-ray. So, the other topic that's been brought up, but actually before I get to that, we've gotten a few more letters, a few more questions, and for those listening, I'm going to hold off on talking about or answering most of those until we have Renato back on the cast, or at least another couple of members, so we get a wider viewpoint and more answers. I will, however, point out that over the last week, while Curie has been in the charts, they've been doing very well by most measures, both digitally and on the Oricon charts.
Yes, that's the group that surveys all of the music sales, well, CD, physical CD sales in Japan.
Did they actually hit one on Oricon?
Or? Number three.
Number three, okay. Yes. And I know, because there are multiple charts out there, and there was one chart that Mezumashi Terebi, which is a morning TV program, they follow a different chart. I believe it's a download-based ranking. And
well, a mix of download and physical.
And according to them, while Kure hit number one with their most recent single, in fact, they knocked Hikaru Utada off number one spot down to number two, which, well, you can say Utada Hikaru Utada doesn't have the same relevance to the modern music scene that she did have 5 or 10 years ago. She comes out of retirement whenever there's a new Kingdom Hearts game or Evangelion movie, but still, she's a household name. So to be knocked off, I thought, was pretty big news. And yeah, they called up all the girls from Walkure the night before this show aired and just told them to come into the studio. They didn't tell them they knocked Hikaru off the charts. They just brought them in and they told them, and they were all really surprised and excited. We got to see them all wearing their dresses from the music video. Unfortunately, we didn't really get much in the way of music. Normally when you get these kind of appearances on morning television or afternoon or evening wide shows or panel talk shows, artists that are interviewed get to do at least one song. Normally one song, right? It's all a very staged affair. But this time around, I guess being first thing in the morning and them not having told the girls why they were coming on TV, and no time to prepare or prep, all we got was, you know, what, half of a verse by Junna with the girls chiming in at the end, a cappella, which was nice enough. But again, it seemed like a bit of a tease. It was like, come on, when are we going to get them doing something live on TV? Hopefully this is indicative of things to come. Certainly the music's performing well. And the tickets for the concert. Now, public sales have not opened yet. There have been several draws. Fan club draws, homepage draws, and several other website advanced draws. When I say tickets going on sale to the public, there is normally a limited amount of tickets left. So a lot of the tickets are already gone. Public ticket sales opened at the end of this month. And at this point in time, looking on auction, there are tickets going for up to about 25,000 yen. And look, if I'm just going to be silly here because I couldn't be bothered doing a proper exchange rate. So I'm just going to say that's $250, for better or worse.
That's about right.
There were some scalpers. Now, granted, they're not getting this money, but they thought these tickets are popular enough to say they want up to $1,000. So, granted, I didn't see anyone bidding on those, so I think they're getting ahead of themselves. But the fact that they foresee this kind of demand, I thought was kind of telling. The only time I've seen a concert ticket in Japan go for that much was the Yoko Kanno Tanabata Sonic gig, which was a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And scalpers outside the Budokan at the venue were getting $1,000 per ticket. So I don't think we'll hit those heights, but certainly it appears that there is some demand there. So there's an indication of at least, well, curious popularity, if not the show. Has there been any news updates on your end, Egan, like regarding the show? Nothing news popped up in the last week?
I suppose we can add that it was Oricon reported 35,839 copies physical from their surveys. And that doesn't count other stores that, you know, like Amazon, that doesn't report to them, doesn't count downloads. So we're talking even higher than that as a total.
Interesting. It'll be interesting to see what happens when the actual album comes out in, was it July? Because the soundtrack's in June and the album's in July.
That's right.
Uh-huh. And we
June 22nd for the soundtrack, July 6th for the album from Valkyrie.
And, you know, we got, again, yet another new song this episode. So by the time that album comes out, we'll already be, you know, have heard all those songs and be looking at, I'd say, at least two dedicated vocal albums just for the series alone. Unless they start reusing songs. Now, that would be par for the course for Macross. And I wouldn't mind that because a lot of the songs are great. But they've kind of set up this precedent of having new music all the time. To the point that when Ike and I Borderline came back in today, I'm like, oh, it's been a while since I've heard that. This is a great song, but wait, they're reusing it? It's kind of a double-edged sword, so my expectations are kind of being changed by all this new music. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But anyways, guys, thank you for your time tonight. I think we should fold out.
I just want to bring something up really quick. This week, the first installment of Macross E came out. Without getting into big details, because I'd rather save that for a regular cast,
mm-hmm.
How much does it have or cross-pollinates with Delta or coming off of Frontier?
It's a good question. So Macross E for extra, which is a lame abbreviation. It could have been any other words that start with E, but extra, really. It is extra as in it is the extra chapter, otherwise the missing chapter, between Frontier and Delta. It's set in 2062, with, of course, Frontier being set in 2059 and Delta in 2067. And it's dealing with, the, among other things, the development of the techniques that Valkyrie will use. It's on a planet called, is it Pireru? Pireri? Pireru? Come here, manga. Let me look up this planet name. Ooh, penny shots.
Let me put in that it's not the worst name Macross has come up with. We literally had a title called Trash. So,
Pipure, that's it. The planet Pipure, which has three different temperature zones on the planet, like a very hot zone. The middle is a temperate zone where humans live, and a very cold zone, which has these beasts, which are like almost kaiju-looking huge monsters that normally stay in their region of the planet, but are being affected by the Var and are encroaching on human areas. So Chaos is putting together a team to try out this theory that song can affect the Var. So this is one of the first teams that have done this with, and then putting it together. So as such, it seems to have greater ties to Delta at this point, after only one chapter. Granted, the one chapter was about 50 pages or so. But in the very last panel, there is one of the small class Vajra in the background. So it actually says in the opening page, this is the story in between Frontier and Delta. Literally, there you go. You can look right there. It's like between F and Delta. So hopefully they'll bring more Frontier elements into it.
Yeah, I figured by the time we record a regular cast, maybe the story will pan out a little bit more.
Right.
We can get into characters, background, stuff like that.
Yeah, we'll get into all that then. Out of the four manga to date, you know, one is a straight story adaptation, which is lackluster. These will all come out in Tankobon collected forms eventually. I'm not going to buy these monthly foam book thick manga for all four titles. The Windermerian ones is probably the second most interesting because it's going to have this backstory between Keith and Royd. The Freya story so far has had some interesting backstory, but other than that, E is where I'm at the moment because it's got the most originality, original concepts, original world building, more unique art style. And so I will probably be buying this one monthly just to keep up with it because I think it's going to be very interesting. Unfortunately, they do tie all these manga up at the shops now with string, so you can't touch Iomi that stuff. You can't stand and read it in the shop, which is a crime against humanity because no one wants to buy all four. But yes, I'll be reporting in on E fairly regularly, I think. But thanks for reminding me of that, Adrian. So speaking of that, Adrian, I believe you mentioned it at the beginning of this cast, but where can people find you? Wake up!
Yeah, I'm ready to go to sleep. It is what time?
12:30.
Yeah, it's past my bedtime. Again, my name's Adrian Lozano. You can tweet me at GiantRobo on Twitter.
And we need to sit down at one point and record about all those Valks they have on display down at Akihabara this weekend.
Oh, Tamashii Features, yeah. That was pretty lame.
Oh, all right, that's a future podcast. Egan, you're mysteriously out there in the ether. In the ether. Near Venus, being mysterious. This is, of course, your host, Gwyn Campbell. I can be found at Gwyn Campbell, capital G, capital C, one word, on Twitter. You can also find me floating around Facebook. And, finally, as I mentioned previously, you can find me on the Repacked podcast. Normally, once a week, it depends. I'm a regular on their mini-series called Dishing on Delta. And Craig, the host, has a great podcast. They talk about a bunch of toys, a lot of Transformer stuff. They do a anime roundup every other month as well. So go over and check out the Repack podcast if you are after some more great audio content. Because, you know, guys, everyone listens to podcasts. And on that note, this is Speaker Podcast Gertalk, folding out for another episode of Delta, and extremely gaudy, waiting for the next one.
One last thing we better mention is the next episode, what it's called.
Oh, title.
Good point. Oh, we forgot that.
Should we add, it's Genkai Uncontrol, which I guess, out of control, beyond the limits of control, that kind of thing.
Could it be an Ikenai borderline?
Exactly.
All right. So we'll cross that borderline next week, hopefully, folks. Until that time comes, we're folding out. Kitty.